This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S. President Joe Biden proposes a sweeping immigration reform agenda, but will it garner sufficient bipartisan support? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. On his first day in office, President Biden signed a flurry of executive orders reversing former President Trump's restrictions on immigration. With the stroke of a pen, Mr. Biden ended travel restrictions from predominantly Muslim countries in the Middle East and Africa, initiated a halt to border wall funding, and strengthened protections for the so-called Dreamers, or immigrants brought to the country illegally as children. He is calling on Congress to pass legislation which provides Dreamers permanent legal status and a path to citizenship. This would essentially cement the protections in the Obama-era Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA, which protected the Dreamers from deportation. Another element of President Biden's immigration reform bill, called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021, which aims to overhaul the nation's broken immigration system more permanently, is a pathway to legal status for nearly 11 million immigrants currently in the country illegally. The bill would also address the root causes of migration, especially from Central America. As reported by U.S. News and World Report, the bill would create a $4 billion plan to tackle the underlying factors that cause people to migrate to the United States, especially from the so-called Northern Triangle countries, or Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. The legislation also calls for increased border security by providing funding for screening and enforcement technology and training for border agents. U.S. News and World Report staff writer Claire Hansen also states that, quote, though ambitious, the bill is not without precedent. In 2013, during the Obama administration, the Democratic-led Senate easily passed a bipartisan immigration reform measure that would have cleared a path to citizenship for immigrants in the country illegally and made major changes to the legal immigration system, unquote. She notes, however, that the bill was not picked up by the Republican-controlled House and died. Obama's predecessor, George W. Bush, identified the issue as a priority and backed measures that included both a path to citizenship and heightened border security to no avail. Even though the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the executive branch are currently controlled by Democrats, it is a narrow majority, especially in the Senate, which is evenly divided 50-50. Democrats would need to sway 10 Republicans to overcome procedural hurdles required to approve any major legislation. Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida and one of the so-called Gang of Eight who worked on the 2013 measure called the Biden bill a non-starter. Well, for more on the substance and politics of President Biden's immigration reform proposal, we turn to two immigration analysts. Ali Norani is president and CEO of the National Immigration Forum, and that's a nonpartisan advocacy organization working with faith, law enforcement, and business leaders to promote the value of immigrants and immigration. And Laura Reese, she's a senior research fellow in Homeland Security at the Heritage Foundation, and that's a conservative think tank here in Washington. Previously, Laura worked at the Department of Homeland Security on management and immigration policy and operations issues. And both join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Carol.
Ali Norani, let me begin with you. What is your assessment of President Biden's immigration proposal? Are you largely in favor or against, and why?
Well, I think that the Biden administration's proposal, as we understand it, is a balanced approach to migration in the 21st century by really thinking about what are the root causes of why somebody needs to migrate to the U.S. I think that's a very important starting point to up the investment in Central America so that there's a reduction in corruption, violence, impunity, poverty. And these are the factors that ultimately lead somebody to make a perfectly natural decision to say, you know what, I'm going to try to find safety somewhere else. Second, I would say that their approach to border security is very, very informed. There is a lot of language in the proposal as it stands to think about what are the most effective border enforcement policies. What are the ones that will keep the country safe from the smuggling of people, of drugs, of guns, of money? In fact, for the Biden administration to think so specifically about investing in ports of entry, where the majority of drugs, guns, and money are smuggled, I think is just smart border enforcement, which has frankly been missing for a very, very long time in the country. And then third, to really think about how do we make sure that the undocumented immigrant community is brought into the full light of our society as taxpayers, as contributors. And if they do meet certain criteria and pass criminal background checks after a number of years, to fully own the American dream as U.S. citizens. So overall, this is, I think, a very positive and encouraging starting point. And now we turn to Congress to really develop the bipartisan support that we know that exists for ideas like this.
Turning to you, Laura Reese, for your take on the Biden immigration proposal. Whether you're for or against it, do you see it as a positive start or do you see some drawbacks?
Definitely see some drawbacks. In terms of the proposed legislation that has gone to Congress, it does not appear to include any border security provisions. And in the multiple comprehensive immigration reform bills that have been debated in Congress the past two decades, they always included border security provisions. In addition, it attempts to erase the line between legal and illegal immigration, including changing the word alien to non-citizen. What this does is overshadows the difference between someone who comes here unlawfully, what happens to people who come here as visitors temporarily. And then in addition, we have a third category of lawful permanent residents. To change the word alien to non-citizen groups all three of those categories into one. Furthermore, it increases competition for American workers who are struggling right now with unemployment and the economic fallout from COVID and forced shutdowns by the government, and would greatly increase costs to the taxpayer. On the executive order front, the president seems to be prioritizing illegal immigrants over lawful immigrants and over U.S. citizens. He is greatly reducing the amount of immigration enforcement and really narrowing the priorities of who would be removed. And also, you had mentioned revoking the travel restrictions. That has been grossly mischaracterized as being about Muslim and religious and nationality purposes under the Trump administration, when great detail and a very thorough review was done by the Trump administration for nearly 200 countries to determine who cooperated with the U.S. with basic international travel requirements, who is a state sponsor of terrorism, who protects terrorists among their country. And to revoke those travel restrictions is a real danger to our national security.
Turning back to you, Ali Noorani, I do want to move on, but I'd like to give you a chance to respond to Laura's critique of the Biden proposal, as well as some of those executive orders to which she referred.
So I think one of the things that we have to be really clear about is that job number one for the Biden administration, for Republicans and Democrats, is to get the country back on its feet as we struggle to respond and recover from COVID-19. I think Laura and I would completely agree on that. Now, when you look at the data and really who's been working shoulder to shoulder with U.S. citizens to get us through COVID-19, it's the immigrant community. 70% of farm workers are immigrants. 40% of food packers are immigrant. And when you look at the farm working community, some estimates have up to 3/4 of farm workers are undocumented immigrants. And these are folks who are here, they're working, they're quite literally getting food to our table. So I think that the Biden plan is a smart and compassionate acknowledgement of what the U.S. citizen worker and their families need in terms of getting food to their table. So let's make sure that those farm workers who are by and large undocumented are able to be American and contribute fully as taxpayers to our society. And then, you know, the questions around kind of the executive orders, I think that the Biden administration has really tried to balance what's the message we're sending to the world with the health challenges that we continue to face. So, you know, when you look closely at the executive orders that have been signed, you know, many kind of COVID-19 related travel restrictions stay in place. In fact, those were held over from the Trump administration. But there's really no national intelligence reason or homeland security reason to retain the Muslim and African travel bans that the Trump administration put into place. Elizabeth Newman, in fact, who was an assistant secretary for the Department of Homeland Security for President Trump, recently wrote a report making that precise case that there is no national security reason to continue those travel bans. So I think that there are positive things moving forward that ultimately serve the needs of the American worker and their families.
One more question, Ali, before I go back to Laura, and that is, Laura talked about the fact that she doesn't think that there's enough for border security. And in fact, there are funds for technology to screen people and cargo at the border, but really no physical barriers. Do you see that as a problem?
I don't see that as a problem at all. Do you remember El Chapo, the very kind of notorious drug smuggler from Mexico? Well, when he was on trial in the U.S., his lieutenants said under oath that they were not worried about structures in between ports of entry. Where they wanted to get their drugs into the U.S. was through ports of entry. So this is the mastermind of drug smuggling that has decimated families across the United States. So if he is saying, you know what, your ports of entry are kind of pretty weak, that's where our priority should be. So I think that the Biden administration, the Department of Homeland Security, let's think about where the risks are and improve our security at those risk points. And that's ports of entry. And, you know, this proposal, you know, I'm looking at a draft of it right now, and it's pretty clear that, you know, there's a priority on risk-based border enforcement, not symbolic walls in the middle of deserts where there are no significant risks to the public safety of the American people.
Turning back to you, Laura Reese. You obviously have different views on this very controversial issue, but what about the so-called DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, minors who were brought to the United States illegally as children who really know no other country than the United States? Would you agree that there should be a pathway to green cards, that is permanent resident status and citizenship for them?
No, I would not agree with that. That is a form of amnesty. And the U.S. has a set of immigration laws. We have a right, like every other sovereign nation, to enforce those immigration laws. And while we are a nation that continues to have the most generous immigration policy in the world, we immigrate more than 1 million people lawfully each year. Secondly, it's about valuing human life. Parents are making the very dangerous journey north and bringing their children with them, not only risking themselves, their lives to smugglers, to drug cartels, human trafficking, etc., but then they are here unlawfully and face the circumstances that they do. Parents need to do this lawfully, and the government should encourage migrants to follow our immigration laws and to do it lawfully. To award lawbreaking with green cards is a smack in the face to the many millions over the decades who have followed the law, waited their turn, and are proud to come to America following its laws. So no, I do not agree that rewarding illegal immigration with green cards is good policy, because we never end this cycle.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are Ali Noorani, president and CEO of the National Immigration Forum, and that's a nonpartisan advocacy organization that works with faith, law enforcement, and business leaders to promote the value of immigrants and immigration, and Laura Reese. She's Senior Research Fellow in Homeland Security at the Heritage Foundation. And we are discussing the pros and cons of President Joe Biden's immigration reform proposal. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Afghanistan, Miran Warsha Amiri. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, now back to our discussion on immigration reform in the United States And back to you, Ali Noorani. I don't want to belabor the point on the DACA, but just to give you an opportunity to respond to what Laura Reese was saying about the DACA program, that if they are given a pathway to citizenship, that this sends a signal to others that they can bring children illegally to the country. What do you say to those who think this is the wrong message?
Well, you know, again, I just go back to the data and the challenges that are facing the country right now as we are trying to respond and recover to COVID-19. And the data shows that 29,000 DACA recipients are healthcare professionals. I've talked to a number of them who are in fact healthcare professionals in rural underserved communities across the country that are quite literally helping Americans and their families respond and recover to COVID-19. So I think that DACA recipients across the country, whether they are healthcare professionals, food service workers, engineers, or otherwise, they're contributing to the bottom line interests of the United States. I just think that we've got to be rational about their approach here. And in fact, you know, Laura brings up a really interesting point, is that if there's anything that I would quibble with in terms of the Biden immigration proposal, is that we really need to be thinking about the future of our legal immigration system. And one of the most effective ways to mitigate and reduce undocumented or unauthorized immigration is to actually have a functioning legal immigration system that creates the pathways for whether they're workers or families to enter the country in a regulated fashion. That's something that I think Republicans have the opportunity to bring to the table in Congress, and I think ultimately will reduce significantly unauthorized migration to the U.S.
Quick point of fact, Ali, is the DACA proposal part of the overall U.S. reform legislation that Biden has proposed, or is that separate from it?
The U.S. Citizenship Act, as proposed by President Biden, would, for both DACA recipients and farm workers, because remember, farm workers are playing such a significant role in the response and recovery to COVID-19. For both of those communities, they would be able to move from their current status to legal permanent residence, and then after they've met the criteria as LPRs, be able to apply for citizenship.
Thanks. Ali Noorani, let's talk about the politics, because clearly this is the biggest challenge. How do you see moving this legislation forward, given the criticisms that Laura Reese has expressed, which really echo many of the Republican critiques about this bill? Do you think there's any chance, or could the bill be broken up, like the part about DACA? They maybe can pass that, but they can't pass the whole thing. How do you see the politics of this immigration bill?
Well, I think one of the things that was missing during the Obama administration is that we were never clear exactly what the Obama administration wanted to see in terms of legislation. So we've got that from the Biden camp, if you will. Now, I think it's up to House and Senate leaders to really determine what can the legislative market bear in Congress. And I think one scenario is that we see a handful of different pieces of legislation, let's say a DREAM Act to serve DACA recipients and Dreamers, something to address the approximately 400,000 to 500,000 recipients of temporary protected status, many of those folks who have been here on temporary legal status for up to 20 years. And then for farm workers to legalize their status and to establish a functional legal immigration process for farm workers. In fact, all three of those components moved through the House of Representatives last year. They can move before April as they stand now. And then the process really focuses on the Senate. And in the Senate, we need to identify the 10 Republicans who want to be a part of a constructive approach. And remember, immigration reform for decades has always enjoyed bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate. So, you know, we're confident that we're going to be able to get to the necessary 60 votes because we know that this is what the American public is looking for.
Turning back to you, Laura Reese, Ali Noorani responded to your critique about the DACA program, this Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, saying that, you know, in fact, these were minors who came here illegally as children, and that they really do make a strong contribution to the country. And he also mentioned the farm workers and those under temporary protected status, which are part of the larger Biden immigration reform agenda. To what extent do you think that perhaps DACA could be a point of convergence between Democrats and Republicans?
Well, again, to award the lawbreaking with green cards here sends the wrong message, and this cycle then would continue. With respect to temporary protected status, That program has become anything but temporary. And the original intent of the program, which was to protect people who happened to be in the U.S. when something bad happened in their home country, whether it was a natural disaster or civil strife breaking out, has become more of a group asylum and even a group amnesty. And that was not the intent at all. In terms of the agricultural workers, we do have lawful programs, worker programs, whether it is agricultural worker program or seasonal non-agricultural worker programs. And those have been rather successful, particularly during the COVID time. Reforming those, we can debate that, negotiate that, make those programs better. But that is the point. It's to make the lawful programs work for Americans and for American employers, and to limit and greatly reduce illegal immigration to the U.S.
So back to you, Ali Noorani. In terms of public opinion, where does public opinion stand with respect to immigration reform? And how much will that matter for Congress? And to what extent do you think some Republicans who are reluctant to go forward and are more inclined to adhere to the Trump policy of more restriction, to what extent could that move some Republicans?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because actually over the course of the Trump administration, we saw public support for immigration increase over time. But I've always been kind of one of the, I think, few advocates out here who says, okay, public opinion is one thing, but what's reality? And, you know, reality for Republican members of Congress, particularly House members and, you know, a third of the Senate every year, is that they're going to have to face a primary election in 2022. So what I keep going back to is the 2018 midterm election, and then even 2020, because in both of those elections, you saw growing numbers of conservative voters in suburban and even rural areas who are saying two things. They are still people of faith, but they no longer self-identify as evangelical. That's number one. And number two, you see that both in 2018 and in 2020, they were turned off by President Trump's child separation policy, the travel ban, and many of the other harsh enforcement measures that the Trump administration put into place. And they're looking for a different path forward on immigration. Wherein lies the opportunity for Democrats and obviously President Biden to be speaking to this electorate who used to vote Republican? They're now looking for either a Republican to think about immigration differently or Democrats who are going to really represent the values that they seek.
Turning back to you, Laura Reese, what about the politics of the legislation? Do you see any potential compromise between Democrats and Republicans on this bill?
So I agree with your point that you raised before about doing single issue bills. Congress has not seemed to learn from its own past of creating hundreds and hundreds of pages, even 1,000-page comprehensive immigration reform bills that then die of their own weight. And unfortunately, members of Congress have not allowed single issue bills. If for example, a mandatory E-Verify bill is introduced, opponents of that don't let that bill move unless they attach something that they want, such as an amnesty, and it just grows from there. And they have repeated this over the past two decades. I do think they would be more successful if they took an approach of single issue bills.
And then lastly, Laura Reese, in terms of public opinion, it seems like public opinion is moving toward a reform of our immigration system. What is your reading of public opinion?
Americans want to continue to have border security. So to have a bill that would have no border security as part of it, I think, is a non-starter. To stop building the wall is the opposite of doing national security. Border patrol agents have requested the wall. They say it works where it is built, and it makes their jobs easier, and it stops poisonous drugs that flow between the ports. Americans want good jobs. They want economic opportunity. And again, in this COVID economy and high unemployment, it does not make sense to add further competition from people who aren't here lawfully when Americans are trying to get back to work and get their feet back on the ground. And Americans want to be safe. So that means having sound immigration vetting, but also not encouraging people to make the dangerous illegal journey north to the U.S., putting themselves at danger and enriching corrupt smugglers and drug cartels.
Well, certainly immigration reform, a very controversial issue, and I'm sure we'll be returning to that in the near future. That's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Ali Noorani, President and CEO of the National Immigration Forum, and Laura Reese, Senior Research Fellow in Homeland Security at the Heritage Foundation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.